Each of my CDs is a metaphor for how the principles behind life play out in everyday life. If you want to get a deeper understanding of those principles, I highly recommend the materials of Sydney Banks. He has CDs, he has DVDs, and he has books. And you can get them on our website, which is PranskyandAssociates.com. The other thing I'd like to say in preparation for listening to this CD is you'll notice that I talk, there's a very slow pace, okay? It's very low key. And for some people, that's a little awkward. But I urge you to stick with it because it's done intentionally. The value and the absorption you get of these CDs will be enhanced by this slow pace. It'll get you into a state where you'll be able to get more out of them.
This tape was made at a weekend conference in Kihei, Maui, April 1990, conducted by Sydney Banks and George Pransky. Present were mental health professionals as well as the general public.
Everybody here knows him, but I'd just like to just tell you what I would say about Sid, okay? The first thing is, I'll tell you a little bit about my own story. What happened to my wife and myself is we were living in San Francisco, and we'd been together for 3 years, and our relationship was like a leaky boat, you know? And we went to therapists and marriage counselors and seminars, and they told us if we made another hole in the boat, the water would go out through the new hole, see? So we did, but what happened is there's just more water in the boat. So we kept punching holes in the boat, and every time there would be more water in the boat. We couldn't. So it looked to us like our relationship wasn't worthwhile for us, but we were both too insecure to get out of it, because when you're in a relationship like that and things aren't working, you know, your self-esteem goes down and everything. So we were really stuck. In terms of my private life, I couldn't relax. I didn't know how to relax. So it was like, I was like the Roadrunner, you know, in the cartoons. It's like, Linda would say, well, let's go out and relax. So I'd go outside, I'd sit in the chair, I'd say, okay, now what? You know, I mean, that was it for relaxing. And it was like I had a high idol. I just was under pressure all the time. Now, I accepted it because I'd always been like that, and that's the way my family was. And I saw it as kind of a good thing because it made me so productive. My career was going very well in the sense that I was making a lot of money and I was enjoying my work. But it was kind of like that old good news, bad news joke. The pilot tells the passengers, I have good news and bad news. The good news is we have tailwinds. We're making very good time. The bad news is we're lost, you know? And that's the way I was in my career. I was losing the dream. I was losing the hope. I was losing the optimism that I could really help people. And I was starting to give up on my work. And that was a really painful thing. That the longer I did the work that I was doing at that time, the less hopeful I was about the possibility of helping people to change. Now, I had heard from my partner at the time, a fellow named John Enright, that there was a person up in Canada who was talking to people and they were changing. And this intrigued us. And we talked to this person who told us that, and we said, well, you know, how long would he talk to people? I mean, what is it, like a 6-month course or something? They said, well, no, he talked to them maybe 45 minutes. So, well, What kind of people are we talking about here? He's just troubled people. People from who have dropped out, people who are compulsive workers, people who have psychological serious illnesses. Well, I said, wait a minute, let me understand this. This guy gets these people in the room, he talks to them for 45 minutes, right? And now these people are cured? He says, yeah. I said, what does he talk about? I said, I don't know. I don't remember, about thought or something. Well, John and I could not get it together. We couldn't imagine what it was. We figured there must be something more. This person's probably uneducated about these matters. We'll go up there and see through it in a second. So we went up. Linda and I went up to Salt Spring Island, where Sid was at the time, and we went to one of his talks. And we go into the room. I go in the room. I'm telling you, that's when it hit me. Because there was a vitality in these people. There was an optimism. There was a softness. And then I was a relationship counselor. So I looked at the couples, and the couples were close, but not clingy. And I had never seen that before. There were more happy couples in that room, that gymnasium, than I had seen in my entire career as a counselor. I mean, even my friends, there were just a room full of couples, and these people all had this feeling of life about them. And I could not get it together. And this was before there was even a Sid Banks in the picture for me. It was, the results were right there in that room. Well, now I was fascinated to hear how he did that. So he came in and he talked. And I mean, I was really shocked and disappointed when I saw Sid, because he was such an ordinary kind of down-to-earth person, and I was hoping he would be a charismatic figure, you know. But he wasn't. He just sat down, and he talked in this really soft, gentle way. And I noticed that people were, at the edge of their seat. And I couldn't get it together. I said, how could people get so enthralled about something that's so low-key? So this was all like a giant eye-opener to me. It turned my world upside down. He talked. They were very accurate. I had no idea what he was saying. You know, he stopped, and that was it. So I kept going around to the people and try to find out the real story, you know, the discipline, you know, the techniques that they were using. I knew there was more to it than met the eye. But there wasn't anything more to it than that. And I'm telling you, when I stepped into that room and saw those results, it did something for my hope. It brought back my dream. And that's what youth is keeping your dreams. And it brought them all back. And even though we hadn't even met Sid, our relationship changed because we both saw some hope. And I saw some hope in my work. And I saw some hope in my life. And that was before Sid even entered the room. The results were so powerful that it gave me hope. And if I had never met Sid, I honestly think it would have helped me. But then I met him, and he was very interested in what I was doing. I think it was kind of like entertainment for him, you know. He kept asking me what I did with people. And I knew he was laughing, but he wouldn't do it. He'd say, oh, that's interesting. Let me get this straight now. You know, it's kind of like those Bob Newhart dialogues. Let me get this straight now. The people are in pain, right? So you get them deeper into the pain in order to make them happy, right? I said, yeah, yeah. Good. He said, that's very interesting. You know? So we had our dialogues, and I went away extremely irritated because I felt like he was putting me down, and I felt like, to be honest with you, what does a welder know about psychology? You know what I'm saying? If he understood what I understood, he wouldn't be saying that. He's totally unrealistic. He's Pollyanna. But the guy's heart's in the right place. So that's how I dismissed it. I walked away and dismissed it. I went back to my work, and the seed had been planted. I began to question the pain I was putting people through. I began to question the relationship between my own struggles in life and the fact that I was teaching others. You know, I began to wonder if it was the blind leading the blind. And my work got undercut, and I couldn't do it. And John Enright, bless his heart, said, George, you're a wonderful guy, but you're killing us professionally. People don't want to go to your seminars. Your heart's not in it. Go up to Salt Spring, spend the summer there, we'll pay you for it, and then see what happens. And that's what I did. And I didn't, maybe I saw Sid 5 times over the summer. But I spent the summer with people who had, like yourselves, who had some understanding of the possibilities in this philosophy of life. And by the end of the summer, we had a wonderful summer. My oldest daughter had a tremendous experience, which changed her attitude towards life forever. And my wife and I got along beautifully, and we had a great summer. But we felt like we hadn't really learned anything, and we were a little, had trepidations about going back, because John had kind of financed me, and I really felt like I hadn't learned anything. But I didn't understand at that time that this way of reaching people works through your eyeball. It doesn't work through your intellect. And when I went back, my eyeball had changed. And I saw life so differently. It looked like a circus. And I saw people causing each other unnecessary distress. And I saw people doing the work, my students doing work, and they looked like Attila the Hun does therapy. You know, I mean, they were so harsh. I was thinking, oh, my God, did I teach them that? And at that point, Linda and I were seeing life differently, and we just proceeded on. And everything improved every year, and we just took it for granted. And that's what's happened. Our career has blossomed, and our relationship has gotten nicer and deeper, and we enjoy relaxing now. It's like a dream. When I was a young boy, if I'd said, what would I want to happen to me in my life? It's what happened to me as a result of my contact with that man. I'm amazed at what's happened, that this has happened in my lifetime. I can't tell you how grateful I am. So I'd like to, with the deepest respect, introduce Sidney Banks.
Well, that's quite an introduction, George, and I feel the same about you, that you've brought a lot to this world, and it hasn't even started yet. And I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I'm very extraordinarily surprised that there's so many people turned up. If there are questions, please ask them, eh? But try and remember, you're looking for one answer, just one. It's about this big. And if you ask a question, it gets this big. You ask another question, it gets this big. You ask 100 questions and you get lost. You got to go back inside. Because I swear, every human being in the world is mentally healthy. It's only the thoughts that create the problem. And if you find out the secret of thought, you're healthy. And it doesn't matter what you talk about. You can talk about the mind. You can talk about religion. You can talk about the mystical qualities of life. No matter what, it's all the same. Just in a different disguise. So we'll try and break through the disguise and get to the core of what we're looking for. It's really very simple. Our life is created from a divine thought. Now this is nothing to do with you. Don't get your old egos up, eh? It's a divine thought. The divine thought is the creator. See, everything comes from what you would call, the Eastern mystics would call, the great nothingness. And the great nothingness is also what the scientists would talk about, a formless energy. It's also what the Eastern mystics would call the great oneness. The only teacher in this world is yourself. It's inside. That's why the wise from the beginning of time have always told you, look within. And people say, oh, good, good, we're going to look within. Then the next thing you know, they forget all about it. Believe me, it's a cosmic creation. You are part of that cosmic creation. You can't escape it. And they talk about free will and a free mind. The wise have always spoken about that. And that's true. Whatever you want to see in life, that's what you see. You have the freedom of thought. The thought is the secret. So we get from thought, we get to the, what you call the perfect psychology. And this is not arrogance when I say perfect, because you're all got it. The perfect psychology. And the perfect psychology is the study of mind, consciousness, and thought. With these three basic principles, you can find anything in this world. You can find your mental health. You can find your happiness. You can find a perfect marriage. Every couple here is sitting in the perfect marriage, and the only thing that creates any imperfections, again, is the thought. People will say to me, well, when did this perfect psychology start? It started before the creation and the existence of time itself. It always has been, and it always will be, and nobody in this world can change that. A lot of people argue with me. I've had two psychologists sit, and they would argue with me. And one would be saying, says, you know, a lot of people don't believe in a free will, a free thought. They think that's bunk. And the other one says, oh, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I think we do have a free will and a free thought system. And the other one says, no, I don't think so. And they don't realize they're both using it right there. And what you got to look for is common sense. If 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4, walk away. If somebody says they're going to find you happiness in your marriage by you screaming at your wife or your wife screaming at you or getting all your hostilities out, please think of this, think of it. You go to get help because you're arguing, then they encourage you to argue. Then when you get happy, somebody turns around and says, oh, that's a bad sign. Because when you're happy, there's only one other place to go, and that is down. So you've got to stay down all your life, just in case you get happy, and just in case you go down. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. You know that knowing in the second chance that Jonathan and Mama Leela talk about? Well, you have that inside you. Because honestly, it's only this big. One singular answer. And the one singular answer will come when you see as what I'm calling a spiritual fact. And a spiritual fact can never, never change. It's as constant as life itself. And if you want to talk about spiritual facts, see, if you hear one spiritual fact, you will have what you call an enlightening experience. That enlightening experience, what it does, it takes all the delusions that you have about life and takes you back to the purity. Then you look outside and you see everybody totally walking in innocence. They're all under a delusion, and you've got to break that delusion. And you break it by learning to see and learning to hear. And people will say, well, oh, we've got to listen to you. No, not at all. Matter of fact, I'll tell you right now, everything I'm saying right now, honestly, don't listen to what I'm saying. Listen for a feeling. Because if you believe everything I say, then there's an old Scottish saying. If you believe everything you hear, be careful, you might start eating everything you see. And that's no good. You got to find it yourself. And listen, not to Sid Banks, not to George Pransky, not to Dr. Mills. You don't do that. You listen, period. And if I learn to listen to Dr. Mills or Dr. Pransky, then that means to say, I've learned to listen. And every human being that comes in contact with me, I hear them. And when you hear a person, you always, always hear an innocence. Your heart goes out to them without the commiseration. That's the ego. You don't commiserate. That's the problem. You, as therapists and doctors here, you know that. If you start commiserating with your patient, you're going to pick up all that negativity, all those wrong thoughts, and all those, that sad feeling. You don't do that. You learn to see. And when you learn to see, you see every single person that walks in your office is a healthy human being. Only thing is, there's a lot of rubbish there. And you've got to get the rubbish away so they can find this mental health. So we start talking about sexual problems in marriage. We start talking about arguing in marriage. We start talking about the problems you have with your children. We start talking about the problems in the work. We start talking about nothing else but problems. That's not the answer. That's encouraging to sickness. The sickness has already been created, and if you talk about it, it's not going to do any good. You've got to find out where it comes from. What creates this sickness? And the simplicity is, it's all thought. And I know that anyone here could stand up and say, Sid, you're full of it, because it's not thought. It's wrong with me. I really do have a problem. I'm not stupid. I know that. But it's created from thought. Trace it back. Conquer this world. You've got to go back to where you started. You've got to go home. And home is where the heart is. Dead center of the universe. And they say, well, I know that. It's in the chakras. It's in the heart. The physical heart. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about has got nothing to do with material or human beings or anything else. Home is that great nothingness. Heaven is where you go. Heaven is not out there. You don't have to wait till you die. Heaven is here. It's on earth right now. Pure psychology is not man-made. It's inside. Inside. Fate is one of those spiritual facts. It's fate that we should be here together today. It was fate that whatever you did yesterday, you did. If I die today, that would be my fate. You can't get away from fate. Fate and the now are one and the same in a different disguise. Now can never change. Now is always the present. And people will say, oh, Sid, I got you in that one. Because yesterday was now. Yesterday, but it's no longer. No, sir. Fate has and the now have never changed. The simple reason is, from second to second, it's always now. You can't run away from now. You can't run away from your fate. And when you honestly see that, something magical happens to you. Whatever happened, okay, psychology is basically, it's based on the past. And right off the bat, that's wrong. Right off the bat. You've taken the wrong curve somewhere. You can't go back into the past. It's true that all your experiences from childhood up to now That's what creates your character and creates your behavior, and you do it automatically. You go into a habit. Well, the only way to get rid of that is to forget the past. Now, I'm not talking about running away from your past or denying it ever happened. Find out the secret to thought. You see, if I had a bad experience when I was a child, and I'm sitting here, and I'm really happy, and I'm having a good time, as soon as I bring in thought from the past regarding such a, you know, an experience, I've lost my happiness. So what do? You go into the office to talk to your doctor, and the first thing he says, well, let's go back into the past. Again, it's the wrong curve. You're taking the wrong road. Forget it. And if you're happy, enjoy it. It's when you enjoy, that's when you keep your happiness. When you have a feeling, it's all in a feeling, it's a feeling of gratitude. So you look for a feeling, and that feeling will bring you the feeling of gratitude, happiness, or sadness. It's all a feeling. It's a feeling that we let control our lives. You know all the atrocities that's gone on throughout life, it's gone on right now in all these different countries, people starving, there's people dying, there's people killing each other, there's wars, there's etc., etc. I don't have to tell you that. Well, you can never change that. Never, never, never in a million years until you change the thought system of humanity. And when you change the thought system, all that vanishes. All hate, all that stuff vanishes. It's all thought. I used to talk for hours on it, so just thought. It's all thought. That's all it is. Thought creates our character. Our character creates our behavior. You tell people this, and sometimes you get real angry. You'll say, damn it, said Banks, that's not true. And you see them, they're really angry and they're hostile, and they say, wait a minute, I'm just you're proving my theory right now. Because listen to you. You're angry, you're hostile, especially gestalters or people that really get into that anger. And the next thing you know, they're saying, but I love my anger. I love it. I love it. I think it's healthy. Yeah, they're looking for help because the poor souls are suffering because their mental attitude is so negative. Then they come out and say, but I enjoy it. 2 + 2 is no longer making 4. No matter what it is, it must add up. And if it doesn't add up, walk out. If you walk in for assistance and somebody says to you, you have to get angry at your wife, you have to assert yourself more and get angry at your husband, you must walk out. Now, you don't condemn the person that's telling you that. You condemn what they're telling you. Not a person. And when you condemn what they're telling you, then you're in neutral territory. You found your happiness and you leave that person with their anger, but you don't have any animosity towards them. And that's the secret. Again, it's thought. Honestly, everything is thought.
Try and explain that to you a little bit. For many, many years, Bob and I would be just like every other couple. We'd have our good days and bad days. And we'd be really happy, really together, really loving. Then we'd go and visit our mom. On the way over to see her mom, we'd have an argument. And I could never figure this out. All those years. And I'd say to Bob, you know, Pat, something very strange here. This is before I had this experience. She said, why? I said, well, every time we got to go over to see your mom, we'd argue. Why is this? And she said, oh, you're blaming my mom. You never said anything about her mom. I'm just saying every time we go there, we have an argument. Oh, you're blaming my mom, and off we go. Then she had very clarification why she should be angry at me. I never said a damn word. Not a word. And this kept going on. And after this experience, we're driving over to see her mom. And off Bard goes again. She goes on to her habit. Habit. Now, this is a habit that even though you know it's happening, you can't do anything about it. You are living habit. You know how to pull your husband's little bell. You know how to ring. And he knows how to get you. You know, you can say, oh, I remember 20 years ago, you said, and off it goes. That's when you get really stuck. When you really want an argument, and you can't get anything that's happening now, you go back in the past. You know, you go into the old closet, and you say, oh, I've got a good one. Then your wife will say, oh, that's nothing. And she opens the drawer to say, remember, oh, here's one. You know. So you go to the doctor, and what does he do? He opens up a whole closet for you. That's not the way it works. So anyway, we're driving over to Salt Spring to see your mom. And it happens again. And by this time, of course, I had this experience, and I burst out laughing. And that really made her mad. Because she's quite serious about all this negativity and what's going on, and I'm sitting in the car, killing my... As a matter of fact, I almost crashed the car. I was laughing so hard. By the time we got to the ferry, Bob's really mad at me. And I'm saying, don't you see, sweetheart? Don't you see? It's happening again. It doesn't matter why it's happening. And honest to goodness, within half an hour, she had it. There's no guesswork. There's no guesswork in true psychology. It's a spiritual fact. You see one spiritual fact, and you have a cure. That's what an insight is. An insight is something that you recognize that you've known all your life, but the only thing, it had been lost in time. And the only reason it's lost in time, we're back to thought again, is the thoughts that have been put in you since birth. The thoughts that you have created yourselves through time. That's all it is. It's thought. You see, some people are super unbelievably successful in business. They're beautiful people. They're very smart people. And yet they're unhappy. You know, there's something missing. So to find their happiness along with their success, all they have to do is realize it's that. There's nothing in the world better for me to see than a happy couple. When a patient hears that they could only be 5 minutes away from a cure, that's a lot of hope. Well, you can actually shrink that 5 minutes to 1 second because they're only one thought away from what they're looking for. And these doctors and throughout the world, all these psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to help humanity. Clear mind, this is a state of meditation. This is where the light bulb goes up. The light bulb shines on top of your head. Dingo. And they turn around to the doctor and say, gee, doc, thank you. You've really helped me through life. And that, again, is what makes the therapist feel good. If the therapist feels good, he goes home feeling good instead of being contaminated from his patient, because one of the worst jobs in the world is what you people have. Because every day you walk into a reality of mental instability and you get contaminated. Then the next thing you know, you're getting a nervous breakdown. Or you're getting tired, or you're getting sick, or you're getting fed up. Because you don't understand the process of mind and thought. Now, with this, these incredible doctors, a lot of them are in here right today. There's a whole bunch here today. And there's people all over the world that are working on the psychology of mind, then they will bring that peace and tranquility
to their patients, because all it is, it's nothing at all. All it is, very simple, that somewhere on the line, these doctors have found a better psychological approach that's ever been on the market before. How simple can you get? It's nothing special. It's just a better approach. But it's not a better approach which has been, stems from, say, the Freudian or the Jung or any other thing at all. It's a fresh approach. You know, the feeling of when a patient lightens up and feels good. That's all. That's all those universities are for. They're trying to teach people to help people. And you can't deny what's been done. That you know, when you mention about the Freudian theories and all this, they're dying. They're dying because it's a very natural thing they should die. Because they came up with an idea about mind. This idea set everybody on the path of there might be something to it. So you have to give them gratitude there. You have to thank them there. You have to be privileged that they've done this, they've set it off. But then the world evolves to a higher plateau of understanding, which makes whatever was said then medieval. And if you hang on to that medieval part, you'll never get anything new. You've got to evolve. And you evolve in mind. And if you evolve in mind, you evolve in everything. So you throw away the old. Honestly, it can never mix. It can never mix. Well, it's lunchtime, John.
Let me say one more thing. See, you know, in a way, it's like the humanity got off on the wrong foot, you know? Like with Freud and Calvin. And humanity got the idea that people had to be protected from themselves and that we were basically up to no good. And that was the wrong foot. So everything that was born of that is contaminated forever, okay? This is a whole different footing. This is a footing that we all got off on the wrong foot. And had we known, we would have realized that people don't have to protect themselves from themselves. That they're by nature beautiful, wise people, and that the normal really, before the fact, is mental health. And mental illness is after the fact. And that's the most important thing about what we've said is that fact. Once you see that fact, you breathe a sigh of relief that all you have to do is be yourself and you'll live a beautiful life. And the hardest thing for you therapists is you've got to see that this is not some synthesis or taking the best part out of all the other approaches. It's an entirely new basis. The old foundation of psychology was the same as the medical model, was doing battle with illness, okay? We've discovered, the therapist that use this approach, we've discovered that there's a power to change in people that we refer to as spiritual. It's the power to change out of nothing, just the power to go on a higher level, to go to a deeper depth, to go to a level of understanding, and then that changes you across the board.
So over here.
And some of the therapists who are using this approach don't like that foundation. They'd rather talk as if this came from some evolution in the field of psychology or a better mousetrap. They discovered a better mousetrap. They don't understand that it taps into a different human potential than this one does. That once it's tapped, it takes care of everything for us. And it's an entirely new foundation, and the field of psychology will build on this foundation. And that'll be psychology.
For many years there, and correct me if I'm wrong, who's Roger? You didn't get a degree in psychology, you got a degree in philosophy, right? And that's all we're talking about. Is your philosophy, my philosophy, her philosophy, that's what it is. Now, there's a deeper thing than philosophy, and it's called theosophy. Now, theosophy is your own intelligence, your own wisdom coming out. not a learned process, your own wisdom coming out. So that's what's happened to the doctors that listen, they click into their own intelligence. That's all it is. Then the person finds their own intelligence. And it's not a philosophy anymore, it's theosophy. Okay. If you get a true theosophist, whether male or female, and put them into a university, and put them with a bunch of philosophers, psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, all these type of people, at the end of the season, you would have geniuses in all fields. You know how long it takes to create a genius? A second. All of you have to do is hear. Honestly, the simplicity of it all is mind-boggling. All it is a feeling. That quietness, that calmness that you've got now. That's all it is. And it's all thought. And that's your free will and your free mind. You take a choice. You take a choice in everything. You take a choice in religion. You take a choice what you're going to be in your workplace. True mind is the mastermind, which is God. The minds of man, of humanity, are an illusion. They're minds, not mind. There's only one mind. Only one. There can only be one mind. And that is God. There can only be one God because God in true reality means total oneness. The Eastern religions talk about the oneness, the oneness. The Christian religions say there can only be one God. And they're all correct because they all mean the same thing. Because God is the oneness of all things. And while you are separate, even in your mind, you've missed it. Pure consciousness, there can only be one consciousness. Any other consciousness that we know, or anything called consciousness, is just a creation from consciousness. This world is created from consciousness. But we wouldn't talk about people's consciousness because you get all mixed up, because everybody's consciousness sees and hears differently. So we'll forget talking about people. If we talk at all, we talk about consciousness. We talk about mind. Don't talk about other people's minds, because then again you have billions of ideas. But if you talk about mind, there's only one mind. The mind and the consciousness are the same. So you found that two things are already one. Then you talk about love. And there's only one love. Just love. Anything else you see out there, no matter what it is, regarding love, is a contamination again. So what you've got to do is you forget all about that, because again, you'd have billions of different ideas. Forget about it. Go back to one. And what do you go back to? Just pure love. When you venture into higher degrees, life becomes a paradox. It's a metaphor. That's what life is. It's a divine metaphor. Unexplainable. It truly can't have a beginning, it can't have an end, because it's the isness of all things. Your minds are connected to this isness, because your soul is the isness. The soul is pure consciousness. That's why you've already got what you're looking for. And if you seek any other place but within, then you're in the outside world. You look in the illusion to try and dissolve the puzzle of the illusion. Information that you're looking for, we call it wisdom. And if you find wisdom, what it does, it's like an antibiotic. And it works on your contaminated version of life. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that unravels the puzzle inside. You got it. When you see this, you start to drop habits. And these habits are the contaminated part of your life. That's why you go to church. That's why you go to your therapist. That people come to you. It's to try and uncontaminate them. And to uncontaminate them, you have to change the thoughts. So simple. I mean, that's not complicated. If you want to change your thought. If you want to change the way society is truly messing up the world by polluting it, killing each other, wars, needless suffering, listen to the simplicity. All you have to do is change their thoughts. Just change thought. Thought is a secret ingredient. It's a missing link that humanity has been looking for since the beginning of time. It links the spiritual world with the material world. It links us with the creator of all things. It controls us, guides us, and honestly, there is only one thought. Only one thought. Can only be one thought. And from that one thought, that one divine thought, all other thoughts are created via us. All living creatures. All living creatures see life via thought. And thought is a bridge that links you with this intelligence. And thought, just like everything else, is an illusion, because there is only one thing, one thought, and the one thought is God, or the essence of all things, or the energy. There's another way to explain the energy of all things. See, take your choice. You take a choice. Everybody always takes a choice. And if you want to call this world, or what you call God, the energy of all things, then that's the very same thing. Only thing is changing is a word. It's the meaning behind the word. It is always the meaning behind the word. That's why they try to explain what I try to explain is a paradox. So the words are of no value. It's the same with many, many books. It's the word. It's just the guide. Behind the word lies the realization. To find the realization from the word to the realization, you must have a clear thought system. The thought system has to be clear. And the thought system is like a bridge between this and that. And you have to clear it. And to clear the bridge, you've got to get all your little personal thoughts and tuck them away and go into the state of meditation. And then your bridge is clear. Then you will have a realization, because that, on the other side of the bridge, lies wisdom you're looking for. And as you go up levels of consciousness,
This would be like clearing the bridge. You know, when you're really down, you really got the blues, and you feel life's all finished, that bridge would be packed solid. You'd never get through it. So you've got to get rid of whatever's stopping you from getting over that bridge. And all it is a pile of contaminated thoughts, creating illusions. And those illusions are standing in that bridge. And you have to see the illusion for what it is. And it vanishes. And then it happens again. And each time you do that, you get more wisdom to assist you down the way. Because naturally, the higher your level of understanding of life, the greater the help you have somewhere. Becomes easier because you see and feel less contamination in the world. Even though you see all the rights and wrongs, don't get me wrong, but it's not contaminating you. It's like if you have a real problem with your husband or your wife and you go to a therapist, and if the therapist says something to you that changes your life, then you're going to see. From that moment on, if he says to you, you know what your trouble is? I see you two doing this, this, or that, and they both click into it, and they both realize the stupidity of whatever they were doing that caused the trouble. When they go home, they're going to see a different reality because they got a touch of wisdom. They got their life uncontaminated. A little bit. So then you have a better chance of having a better marriage and a better life right across the board. Not just in one piece, not one section of your life, but it's like you slip into another reality. And everybody here and everybody in the world, absolutely everybody in the world, is contaminated. Everybody. Nobody escapes contamination. The very fact that you have form is a contamination. It's a degree. That's life. If you go to some place that's full of negativity, that's the feeling you're going to get. But look at life in a different way, a nicer way. And look for the goodness in life. And if there's enough goodness in life comes, believe me, it undoes the bad. Because they're two opposites. It's like love and hate. People say they're the same thing. They're not. They're two opposing poles. Love and hate is completely different. Love is an understanding, and hate is non-understanding. And it's that non-understanding of life or the reality that you see that creates the problem. Again, right from where we started, we're back to thought. On behalf of George and I, we would truly, truly like to thank you. And we're super honored that people of your caliber would come and listen to us. Have a good time and lots of aloha. Thank you.